Sahanavavatu Sahanao Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavatitamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 82, chapter 23. The Dynasties of the Sons of Yayati. Pratigya. The Virat Rupa is not the original form of the Lord. The Lord's original form is Dvibhuja Shyamasundara, the Lord with two hands playing a flute. Because this human form was explained by Krishna himself after he manifested the Virat Rupa, Mayavadi philosophers say that the Lord is originally impersonal but assumes a human form in many other forms when he descends. The yogis and jnanis, that is, mystic yogis and the impersonalists, can understand the absolute truth as impersonal or localized. But although such realized souls are above ordinary human beings, they cannot understand how the supreme absolute truth can be a person. Therefore it is said that out of many siddhas, the souls who have already realized the absolute truth, one may understand Krishna, who actually resembles a human being. Hence, he is originally like a human being, and the impersonal Brahman consists of the rays of his body. So when we say here about the mystic yogis not understanding, that means those who aren't devotees. There may be devotees who practice the mystic yoga system. So we see in the Bhagavatam that there are many devotees who they use the mystic yoga system, because in such a yuga that is the system. But they understand it's the Supreme Lord, but they are meditating on Him as Paramatma, you know, because of that position of it's just Him and just sitting there and is the static element. But then they move on to that direct active devotional service. So they're basically starting with the aspect of Shanta and then moving forward into Dasya, wherever they go. Does that make sense?
The general purity is higher, so you can do it?
Yes. Well, it's just a matter of the realization. See, because what we're showing is that you have regular, ordinary persons who they're simply interested in the basic day-to-day activities, right? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and an occupation to maintain that. That's standard. That's what everybody does. The animals, you know, common person, that's just what they do. Now, those who are into mystic yoga or impersonalism, jnana, they're a step above that. And why? Because they somehow or another are looking at these higher aspects. Right? They're understanding the metaphysical, they're understanding the subtle body, and they understand up to the level of Brahman. But that's as far as they understand. So that Brahman, just having only Brahman understanding or only Paramatma understanding, these are elements of the material world. They're not material themselves, but only those in the material world will have realization only up to that much. Yes?
In the Ashtanga Yoga system, when you reach the level of Dhyana, Dharana, Samadhi, what is realized in Samadhi? Talking about the devotees,
I'm talking about they're non-difference from the super soul.
So they do realize the Paramatma.
Paramatma, but only technically as Brahman. So that's the thing, is you either go forward or back, because you have the Lord who's localized. So Bhagavan means the Lord and his devotees. Paramatma, there's no devotees. Brahman simply means the supreme absolute truth. So they're seeing the Supreme Absolute Truth basically in a form.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So those who are not devotees from Paramatma realization, they move back to impersonal. They merge into the Lord. Yeah, so that's why it said they're actually even less fortunate. So when we discuss, we generally discuss karmis and jnanis. Like that. Yogis, depending upon their position, generally it's always counted as karma. Because of the method of it is that they may or may not be interested they're interested in metaphysics. Whether they're interested in transcendence is another thing. They're only going up to get mystic siddhis, then they're just would stay purely within the realm of karma. And if they move forward into seeing the Lord and seeing their non-difference with the Lord, so they merge into the Lord, then that comes into the category of the jnanis. Right, so you don't technically have to mention them separately. So that's why many times you see it's just only mentioned the karmis and jnanis, and then sometimes it's mentioned karmis, jnanis, and yogis. Otherwise someone would say, well, what about the yogis? But they're technically karmis and occasionally jnanis.
So on the realization of Paramatma, when you realize the super soul and you see yourself as a jiva, that's something else.
That would then you'll move forward, because if you're the jiva, means if you're the jiva and he's the supreme and that relationship is eternal, then you'll move forward into devotional service. So that will start shanta and then it'll move forward. But if you simply see that you are Brahman, the supreme is Brahman, and therefore there's a non-difference, then you're not going to get anywhere. See, we have to also distinguish that the Mayavadis, they'll never get to that platform. Right? They can't act, technically they can't actually get to the platform of Brahman realization. Because Brahman realization means that the Atma is Brahman. And that means as an individual living entity, you're Brahman. Then there's the Supreme Brahman, and then there's the material energy Brahman. So for them, it's all Brahman. So then it's just a matter of distinguishing between the three, but it's all Brahman. Does that make sense? So there's not that much difference is being made. So that's why Sukadeva Goswami can run down the path and not bump into the tree Brahman or fall into the water Brahman, because he can tell that there's a difference. Does that make sense? So when he meets the Supreme Lord, when the Supreme Lord comes, then he appreciates, here's the Supreme Brahman. So the Supreme Brahman that's controlling the illusory energy is telling me that I won't come under illusion. Therefore, then he takes birth. So they're actually in a different category. But still, it's short, because they only understand Brahman. But when they come in contact with Bhagavan, because they're on that Brahman platform, then they'll go forward to Bhagavan. Like the four Kumaras and Sukadeva Goswami. Yes. But we'll see that the Mayavadis, it's all illusion. So their individual existence is illusion. So how are they on the Brahman platform? They can't see the material energy as Brahman. They can't see the jiva as Brahman. They say Brahman is Brahman. But then how do you get the jiva and how do you get illusion? Because if everything is Brahman, it can only come from Brahman. But if Brahman transforms into these, then there's a problem, because Brahman doesn't transform. So basically, you know, it's not actually a valid philosophy. It's for those who basically, what would you say? They have the dogma of everything's Brahman, but they don't discuss it. Right? And so being satisfied with that, it works. But if you actually analyze, then it becomes a problem. That's therefore then all the different transformations even in the Mayavad philosophy. Because you have that Brahma Parinamavad. And then because that's actually what's the original and what Shankaracharya is giving. So, but then, because there's flaws in it, then they come up with these other things, until the final one is that there's only one entity that's dreaming, so we're just part of this dream. So then, who's actually the... So if we're just part of the dream, then why are we worried about it? You know what I'm saying? If we're just, you know, a figment of somebody's imagination. But if you don't... If you accept that separate existence and its importance, then you can have your anxiety in Mayavad philosophy, in Buddhist philosophy, and in your modern concepts, you know, you're a program in a bigger program, but you're worried about staying alive. But technically, what does it matter? You know what I'm saying? So, sorry? No. Sanat Kumar was a previous example where he's on the actual Brahman platform. We're talking now just straight up from Mayavadis.
But from Jnana to Bhagavan, those who study Jnana, can they not come to the Bhagavan platform?
They can. Means that's what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? We appreciate the Bhagavan platform, but in our realization, it will be very sporadic. So.
Pseudo philosophy. Pseudo philosophy.
Yes, so it's not actually a real philosophy. Because only Vaishnava is real philosophy. And then, because it's perfect, Krishna is perfect and complete, even if you take a portion of it, it's still perfect and complete. So therefore, your dwait, vishishta dwait, vishuddha dwait, dwaita dwait, even though they're not actually the full understanding of it, it itself is complete in itself and is perfect. But achinta bheda bheda tattva is the original full philosophy. Right? And even that, then it's we understand up to our level. But the idea is that when we come to that, if we understand that all these are there, then in one sense there's a non-difference because he's non-dual. So there's no difference between himself, Brahman, and Paramatma. But it's different features. So if we appreciate the Bhagavan feature as the highest, then we'll be able to use the other two platforms to advantage to advance in Krishna consciousness. So technically devotees are using all three, they just don't necessarily analyze it that way. But that's what they're doing.
Technically, those who use mystic yoga as the way to reach the supreme,
right,
should they be called devotees, or it depends on their intent? Because
if their intent is devotional, they're devotees. They're just using the Ashtanga yoga system to come to it, because meditation is one of the forms of bhakti. But for those who are not devotees, then they're using this higher system for a lower purpose, to get mystic cities or get to the heavenly planets or that. See, is because any of the systems, right, anamoy, pranamoy, manamoy, all these five systems, they all work. You use them properly, they always work. But then the point is what's your intent in that? So the natural thing is the position and the consciousness will go together. But you'll find that people can use one position and another. So if you're using a lower one for a higher, that's okay. But if you use a higher for a lower, that's not good. Does that make sense? So in bhakti, you're engaging jnana, you're engaging karma in the Lord's service. But because it's not fruitive, it's not called karma and jnana. It's just called buddhi yoga. Right? But you find people that even the Mayavadis, they profess bhakti is a good means to get yourself to the impersonal platform, because of all of the systems, it will be the fastest. But because it's easier than, of course, the jnanis themselves won't practice it, because it's too easy, and they're superior, so of course they use the more difficult program. Right? Like that. So it's just false ego.
You mentioned that Paramatma is not material, but it is a concept of the material world.
No, not Paramatma is a concept. Simply only having realization up to Paramatma and not understanding Brahman, Bhagavan beyond that, that's only found in the material world. Does that make sense? By location, you only find it here. Does that make sense? Like taking buses you only find in a bus stand. Yeah? Like that. So it's not that the Paramatma realization is material. It's only found in the material world. Because in the spiritual world, everyone deals with Bhagavan. So what's the point of Brahman and Paramatma focus? Why would you do that? You understand? Okay. But it's a misunderstood point. You bring it up, then people, oh, you're saying it's material? No. Like that. Someone had a... Yeah.
Prabhupada makes this point that Krishna consciousness philosophy is not an artificial imposition on the mind.
Yes.
So, could one then make that point that that's the difference between Bhagavan realization versus the other two? That there's the main concern to be an artificial imposition, or is it?
Yes, you could. You could. Yeah. There it's being made that it's very natural. And so just the natural position, yeah, you could say like that. The natural position of just engaging the mind, the intelligence, the senses, the identity, that doesn't change. That process, what changes is what is the identity? What do you accept and reject? How do you see the commonality and difference? And therefore, what is the engagement of the senses? But you could say the others are artificial because they give up using the senses or using the mind or using the, you know, like this. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's not complete. Yes.
We know the supreme goal is grand, but then sometimes the smaller goals in our life, they eclipse the big goal.
Yes.
The goal is stray.
Yes.
We think it's, you know, the process is going, but actually, we're just going to the sides.
Yes.
So then we don't.
We're moving forward, just moving forward at an angle.
Wait a minute.
So then devotees sometimes they become frustrated because they don't feel the progress or for whatever reason it is, although the goal is set.
Yes.
But then just for that it's not good enough.
Because it's like, okay, that's the goal. Just like many times you bring up, I've seen, let's say one's having a meeting. And so then you say, but how is this for Krishna? And generally speaking, most in the room will get upset. Of course it's for Krishna. Now let's get down to the real, you know, meaty substance here. You know, the real thing here. So, but the point is, it's there, but unless you connect it, where's the realization? Because there's jnana, and then there's vijnana. So vijnana is realization that comes from using jnana consistently. If I'm always seeing something in connection with the knowledge, then I will get realization from that. But if I don't use that, I will only be following the technical, mechanical point of whatever platform I'm using. Right? And so in modern, you're going to be using anamoy and pranamoy. Right? It's only if you're accepting the Vedic, then you're using manamoy. Right? And gyanamoy, then technically only if it's understanding I'm not the body from the platform of viewing it from the soul, not from I'm not the body, therefore I can do what I want with the body. That will all be pranamoy and anamoy. Because it's not actually, we're using the philosophy but to get the lower thing. That's why we're saying it's not a higher point. I'm using a higher philosophy to establish something lower. Does that make sense? So if basically, unless you're using the Vedic system, then you will always be on the platform of anamoy, pranamoy, as far as mechanics that you're using. Ultimately, the consciousness is anandamoy, because that's what you want. But one has to keep that connection alive by actually being conscious of it. Does that make sense? So, therefore, if you can keep that consciousness throughout, or at least have it in the beginning and the end, before you start, and then at the end, then you give the result, then that connection is made. So that's why association is so important. Because on our own, we'll be doing whatever we're doing, and it appears that everything's going nicely. But generally, we judge how it's going nicely by the results of the mechanics that we're using. You know, I'm getting my round. I want to get my rounds done before 6 in the morning. That's happening. I want to get up at this time. That's happening. I'm only going to eat 3 chapatis, you know, and that's happening. And, you know, so like that. But then why we're doing that, the consciousness of that's to please Krishna, without association, we tend to forget. So that's the point why we're called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Society. So we interact. You know? Does that make sense? So that's based on Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Krishna Bhavanamrita Sangha. Means that association in which the mood of Krishna consciousness is the focus. So that's what the society is actually for. Prabhupada mentions it. It's to give that association to ourselves and to others. That's the real point of the movement. Because by that association, then we'll develop Krishna consciousness. So prema is the ultimate goal. But we'll do that by associating with devotees. And then how we'll do that, so therefore then associating, we need books to discuss. We need places to sit down and do. We, you know, temples. We need to. Why? Just we'll get the benefits. So then we're distributing those books. We're inviting people to the temples, or we're going out and doing programs that are there. We're setting up communities so people can see how they can live a Krishna conscious lifestyle. Does that make sense? So that's then all those seven purposes of ISKCON are all to support being Krishna conscious in the association of devotees. Does that make sense? But then you apply that by, okay, we have our specific temple here, we have our farm project there, we have our book distribution here. And then you have, okay, I manage the temple in this technique, I distribute the book with that technique. So that's actually the proper understanding of how, you know, how you say, if you're viewing it from a managerial point of view, that's management. Anything less than that is just an art. Like that. If you see it like this, then you actually understand the theory of it. Then you can say it's intellectual. But if you don't, then it's just art. Yes?
Because even in our own sangha, we have those contamination of jnana. Karma.
Yes.
For some, put emphasis on the sambandha, getting initiation, and then on prayojana, that, you know, whatever happens in between, you know, I'm going back to Bhakti, that is definite. There's no way. This is not going to happen.
Yes.
And then whatever is in between, it's like, it's okay, you just have to live your life.
You just have to exist, because it's sambandha, so that's existence. So by existing,
yeah.
I exist, therefore I'm Krishna conscious.
Yeah, and that example is used, you know, if your father is a rich man, then you're going to inherit, you just basically have to
yeah.
exist, so you will, whatever condition your life doesn't really matter, you will inherit, you know, the kingdom of God.
Yes.
The second group is saying, this is all nice, but then Abhideya is the most important, because this is our own practice, and then the job to the karma platform, that, you know, we really push it, we really do it, you know. We don't say I'm the doer, but that's what it is. And, you know, like you explained, everything is paka, and that is guaranteed.
Yes. The difference we see in them is they're not taking the full process. Because when we say Abhideya, then that means the application of the understanding of who we are, what's the proper attitude, what's the proper process, and what's the proper goal. So when you have all four of those applied, that's actually Abhideya. So what happens is I have some knowledge, and I know what the goal is, and I may or may not understand the process. So I'm applying that, so it's not complete. So basically I'm looking at the mechanics of Abhideya, not the attitude included. You know what I'm saying? So we're not used to you know, it's just like when you buy something, batteries are not included, you know, so same way, attitude's not included. So we just mechanically do things. That's the whole, now we see that nowadays that the whole emphasis on knowledge and skills, but it's knowledge in connection to skills, not knowledge connection with philosophy, because that's just theoretical, it's not practical. So in that, then the attitude of the bhakti and all that is not actually discussed, because the point is what's your attitude is where you go. You know what I'm saying? The spiritual world, everybody is a devotee. Everyone has the same philosophy that I am a servant, Krishna is supreme. I am a servant of Krishna. I in the association of the Vaishnavas, I serve the Lord. The concept of parampara, you know, eternality, all these things are there. Prema, it's all, there's no difference in philosophy. But the difference in attitude, then whether it's majesty, whether it's sweetness, whether it's a mix, you know, and what aspect that we appreciate, that then sets where we go in the spiritual world. So we can see his attitude is important. Like that. So then we have to use that in connection with prema, not just in connection with mechanics. Because mechanics are improved by including attitude. But we also have to see is that attitude has to include actually being Krishna conscious. So both of them are applying a particular aspect correctly, means mechanically, but as far as actually understanding the completeness of their endeavor, that's what's lacking. Yes.
So can we say that the attitude is the real difference between Vaisadam and Radha Mugasadam?
That's the whole difference. That's also the difference between, in mechanics, something being material and something being spiritual. That becomes a confusion, because what's recommended are pious activities. Right? Pious means it's recommended by Shastra. Impious means it's not recommended by Shastra. Right? It means we're just taking a basic principle. Right now, then in that, but what's recommended by Shastra, since Shastra's its only purpose is developing love for Krishna and serving Krishna in bhakti, that means all the pious activities are recommended, they're actually meant to be used in Krishna's service. So since bhakti is the point, therefore activities, knowledge that's useful in Krishna consciousness, that's called pious. Right? And that which is not, that's what's impious. So then, the pious activities is then the activities you'd use in Krishna consciousness. But because we don't look at this level of consciousness, like you see Prabhupada always talks about the five levels of consciousness. He's always referring to Taittiriya Upanishad. Because if that's not understood, we will think, I'm doing this activity, therefore that activity is what makes it what it is. But it's actually your consciousness is what makes it what it is. Right? Because we have someone's doing brahminical activities, like Sudama Vipra. He's considered topmost Vaishnava. Then you have someone, let's say, like Durvasa Muni. He's a great yogi, not a Vaishnava. Then you have someone like, I'm not sure, like Gotama's son, who's a great pundit, but not a Vaishnava and not a yogi. Right, and then you have someone else who, they're like a daksha, then he's just in the karmakanda doing the rituals and everything and elevating himself to proper pious position. So all these are the brahminical positions. So these we could all accept as Vedic. Right now, there's those also. I mean, you can say as progressive in the Vedic. Then you have lower than that are those who just focus on Trivarga, right? Dharma, Artha, Kama. And so they perform their duties because that will give Artha that you can enjoy. So now we're using the piety, but in the wrong direction. Because all the others, you're elevating yourself to some degree. How you say? So this becomes lower. Then you have those that then just look at Artha. They don't worry about Dharma, Artha, so I can have Kama. And then there's those who just look at Kama. So all that can be seen in the Veda. But the point is that it's which direction you're taking it. Like Duryodhana is following the laws of a kshatriya very nicely. But the actual essence of it, that you're protecting the people so they can be God conscious, that he's missing totally. He may protect the people, but he's not making them God conscious. Like we see, who do we just, Rantidev, right? We just read Rantidev. So because he's God conscious, all his citizens became God conscious. And in Ram Raja, everybody's Krishna conscious. So you see, is that that's actually the purpose of their duties. So without understanding these levels of consciousness, we might make the mistake that because I'm doing the activity, therefore I'm on that level of consciousness. You know, so you get that. I'm wearing a dhoti, therefore I'm a devotee. And then others will say, well, no, but dhotis are just something that they wear in Vedic culture. So it's just pious, it's not devotional. Right? But the whole point, what's the consciousness while you're doing it? That's what makes the difference. So if ultimately the point is I'm dressing in this way because that's how devotees dress, I want to identify with the devotee, right? How you say? I want to be in that number, right? So therefore then you will take it as devotional, though you may not be conscious all the time. So the meditation, as we put it in Gan, is occasional. Right? Because in meditation you have, there's occasional remembrance, more regular than remembering, then it goes into, you know, then you get to samadhi, where it's just full, deep remembrance. So it's just occasionally we'll remember. But still, its intent is because of the devotional. Well, let's say you say a Karmakanda Brahmin, he's wearing the same thing, but that's because the Shastras recommend it. So he, wanting to get the full benefit of his karma, he's wearing a dhoti. But it's not because of that it pleases the Lord in that. It may please the Lord, but that's the Lord's business. You know, he's doing it just because, you know, it's just like you go into the office, you say nice things, you take something, a presentation, the bureaucrat or the secretary behind the desk, he's pleased, he signs your paper. But you're not trying to please him as a person, you're just trying to get your work done, so you please the bureaucrat, you're good. In a sense, so even though it's the same thing, activity, someone else comes, let's say a friend, he comes and visits him at the office. He was in town. He kind of came down and visit. He brings him some gift. Same things going on. Nice talking, giving gifts, you know, and everything. But one then is actually friendship. It's about the person. So that's the thing, is when we understand the mechanics are important in that they get the results that you offer to Krishna. But the point is mechanics alone won't please Krishna. It's the devotion in which the mechanics are operated that pleases Krishna. So you get, like you said, those is just the mechanics, those is just the mood, just the bhav. The point is Krishna consciousness means both together. As it always mentions, that the gopis, you know, it says one clever gopi or one intelligent gopi. You know what I'm saying? It always mentions that. What does that mean? Is that the devotion is there and the intelligence how to apply it mechanically to the best to get the best results is there. So that combination has to be there. So each one has something that's value, but because they're not using the full system, it may have some incompleteness there. Sincerity is there, Krishna will make up what's lacking. He says he'll protect what you have, make what you lack. But if we somehow need to get distracted from that sincerity, and by ego we thinking, yes, I'm doing this and that, then Krishna, okay, then you do it, let's see. You know, like the kid says, no, I'm going to do it. You know, here, let's do it. No, I'll do it. Okay, do it, you know. If it works out, great, and if it doesn't work, then, you know, they go to open the bottle and then they'll hand it to you. And then you open it. Right? Yeah? So that's the whole thing, is that, you know, but the point is, it's not that Krishna drops. It's just, okay, let's see. And then as soon as, you know, you take, then, okay, then he's back again. Does that make sense? Yes.
So we judge our attitude by seeing what's the first thing we drop when we
come into a
difficulty or a challenge. That's how we judge our attitude. The first thing that we let go of,
yeah, you could say that. You would also say, you'd say that would also show your nature, what conditioning you have to work with, because you're always going to cut down to more essentials. You know, so it's like if you have 2 weeks to pack before going to a trip and you can take anything you want, it's going to be very different than someone says you have 5 minutes because we have to leave now, otherwise the guys in the black limousines will show up and then we got a problem. Right, so that therefore, then we have to you take more essentials. So then you'll see nature, but then you'll also see, yeah, what's your actual purpose?
Other two terms. Paramatma and what is it again? We studied in Vedanta Sutra. The person in the cave of the heart is Brahman.
Okay. They're synonyms. Yeah, they're synonyms. Okay. Yeah. Because the point is, the devotee sees Paramatma as Bhagavan. But the point is you'll see like that when you see Bhagavan as Bhagavan. If it's just Krishna, if it's Krishna and the devotees, then Paramatma will also be Krishna and the devotees.
But when the devotee sees Paramatma as Bhagavan, then he will see Paramatma not as individual person, but along with his associates.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
The point is, Paramatma means localized. It's just him.
Mm-hmm.
Bhagavan means him and his associates, pastimes, dham, everything like that. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, in other words, when you have Krishna in a nice cloud with a very nicely designed Om sign around him, that's Paramatma. Okay. Yes. Is that okay? Yes. Is it possible to serve? Yeah. Here, remembering, performing the activities you're supposed to do. Yes.
Wipe
the yom sa. But then you have to put some other people there. Why would he be in a cloud? Like all these. Yeah? Thinking's good.
Many times we come to Krishna consciousness, obviously with baggage, but a lot of time we have that innocence to accept lots of things very easily. But over time, we see the philosophical deviation seems to increase. Now, is that because we actually aren't addressing the right aspects of our spiritual progress?
Yeah, you could say. Well, just like, let's say, okay, now let's say as one is absorbed in material life, one hasn't met the come in contact with Krishna consciousness, right? So that's everything, right? Now you come in contact with Krishna consciousness. You meet the devotees. Are you impressed? Right? Do you see this philosophy is there? It answers everything. This is the greatest thing. Right? So, what becomes prominent? Krishna consciousness. Right? So, your day-to-day activities aren't actually that prominent in your consciousness. So, that's why everything's so exciting and fresh and new, because that's what Krishna consciousness is. You're aware of Krishna consciousness. That's why you are able to perceive it that way. You get that experience. Now with time, you get back into your day-to-day routine. So you're not comparing the greatness of Krishna consciousness to just the day-to-day activities. Therefore, then, that becomes prominent. Then you're not as focused as you could be. So that's why then the Vedas give the how to see all those points that are day-to-day things in connection with the Supreme through understanding of the Paramatma, Brahman, universal form, Krishna and his energies, how he's pervades everything, he is everything, his non-different. All these things then allow us to see Krishna in the day-to-day things. Right? But then much of the time it'll just be taken, oh, that's just gyan. But if you don't use that, it's just gyan in your life, then your life is just karma. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is you can decide on whether it's just jnana or just karma. And of the two, the jnana is higher, as I mentioned here. Right? They can the jnanis and yogis can understand the absolute truth as impersonal, as localized, but although such realized souls above ordinary human beings, means those who are engaged in karma, they cannot understand. Okay, that's why bhakti has to be there.
So these are just basically Gita principles.
They are Gita principles. Like, means this, that's there. It means all those chapters of Gita that are mentioned there, then the last chapters, you know. So all this technical, basically the whole thing is all the basic technical knowledge. Just we're familiar with some parts of it, so we're comfortable with that, we use that. But the point is, any one point used, that's why we see in the Veda, when you're giving the Vini Yoga of a verse, then it, one of the points of it is what sage became perfect by meditating upon this mantra. So one mantra, by meditating on one mantra and applying that one mantra in all aspects of your life, then you can perfect yourself. So it's not a problem that one only focuses on here and there. But the point is that focus has to be complete, not partial. Because as we saw with Prabhu's example, is that they're applying it nicely in one area, but in the other areas they don't apply it at all. They just figure it will just happen automatically. Right? So we do say automatic in Krishna conscious, but that means you apply it, it will automatically give you a result. You don't have to worry, you won't get the result. If I plug in the blender, put things in the blender, put the lid on the blender, and push the button on the blender, right, it will automatically get blended. But if I push the button and stop, it doesn't. Right? It'll automatically get blended. But we're thinking, I'm the doer, so whatever I'm doing, that's what's getting it done. But no, we're taking part in the mechanical process of the universe in which things transform. We can be an instrument in that. So if we're an instrument in that and we're Krishna conscious, so that Krishna consciousness, that will automatically get us the Krishna conscious position. The mechanics just get the results. But if that ultimate result is for Krishna, Krishna consciousness is involved, we'll get that benefit. But how much more benefit we'll get if we're Krishna conscious all the time? That's why sannyas is superior to renunciation. Because sannyas means it's consistent. While renunciation, it basically just means it's there in the beginning and end. Right? But because it's connected, it's perfect. But sannyas is more perfect. Does that make sense? And then just absorption in Krishna is the most perfect. Adhyaya Prakash?
Yes, in the Panchangana 14. But although.
There's a but although.
But such realized souls are
Adhyaya Prakashika. Adhyaya Prakashika. In this 23rd chapter, the dynasties of Anu, Druhyu, Turvasu, and Yadu, as well as the story of Jamagha, are described. The sons of Yayati, Yayati's fourth son, Anu, were Subhanara, Chakshu, and Pareshnu. Of these three, the sons and grandsons of Subhanara were, in succession, Kalanara, Srinjaya, Janamejaya, Mahashala, and Mahamana. The sons of Mahamana were Ushinara and Titikshu. Ushinara had four sons, namely Shibi, Vara, Krimi, and Daksha. Shibi also had four sons, Vrishadharba, Sudhira, Madhira, and Kekaya. The son of Titikshu was Rushudratha, who begot a son named Homa. From Homa came Sutapa, and from Sutapa, Bali. In this way, the dynasty continued. Begotten by Durga, Dirgatama in the womb of his the wife of Bali, were Anga, Vanga, Kalinga, Suma, Pundara, and Odra, all of whom became kings. From Anga came Kalapana, whose dynasty included Divarata, Dharmarata, and Chittarata, also called Romapada, one after another. Maharaj Dasarath gave in charity one of his daughters by the name Shanta to his friend Romapada, because Romapada had no sons. Romapada accepted Shanta as his daughter, and the great sage Rishyashringa married her. Okay, that's the connection. By the mercy of Rishyashringa, Romapada had a son named Chaturanga. The son of Chaturanga was Prithulaksha, who had three sons, Brihadratha, Brihadkarnama, and Brihadbhanu. From Brihadbhanu came a son named Brihadmana, whose sons and grandsons in succession were Jayadratha, Vijaya, Drita, Dhritavrata, Satakarma, and Adiratha. Adiratha accepted the son rejected by Kunti, namely Karna. And Karna's son was Vrishakshena. Yes.
We always call Karna Suta.
Yes.
And here, his father, stepfather, is coming in the line of king.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where is Suta coming from?
Because it means if the father marries a Brahmin, then his son will be a Suta. Just like with Yayati. He has five sons, no? Yeah, so two sons are Kshatriyas, three sons technically are Sutas. Right? Now, if they take up the Kshatriya Dharma and are fixed in that, then they're counted as Kshatriyas. If they took up the Brahminical Dharma, they'd be counted as Brahmins. If they take up driving chariots, then they'll be counted, then they'll just be called Sutas.
I just don't understand why his verse was considered.
Because, but it doesn't mention the mother.
Not the verse, but his family.
Because that's what he's taken up. Somewhere in the line, then the mother was, it was Kshatriya father, Brahmin mother. Right? And then he took up the occupation of driving chariots. So that's then how he... That doesn't make sense?
No, I've always thought that Adiratha was always charioteer and lowborn. That's why Karna...
No, but Asuta is lowborn.
But that's Karna.
No, but the son of Asuta is Asuta. Means if Asuta marries Asuta, their son will be Asuta. Just like Vidura, he's then, what's that technical term?
Dasiputra.
Yeah, Dasiputra. So he marries the Dasiputra. Or Putri in this case. Not getting too contemporary. Okay? And so then his sons will be, then his children will be in the same caste. So that means a Brahmin and a Shudra, you'll get a Nishada. But if a Nishada marries a Nishada, you'll get another Nishada. It won't degrade, it'll stay the same. Is that what it says? Yeah. So then it comes into here, and then it just continues like that. So at some point, then there's something that makes them Sutas, and so then it just continues.
Okay, I just didn't understand why they put them in this line.
Because you need a Kshatriya to get a Sutta. Does that make sense? So since we're describing, so because we see in these lines, then most are Kshatriyas, but some you see is they become Brahmins. That whole group became Brahmins, or like that, or that one was a Brahmin, or like that.
What combination gives a Sutta?
Kshatriya father, Brahmin mother.
Okay.
You know, it's not an uncommon thing. You find many times, how you say? Career military person marries his wife who's like a school teacher or something like that. Very common. You know, because there's that organization, they use intelligence, they can structure and everything like that. Plus, at the same time, the Brahmin is more gentle. you know, and then he's more strong, so it's more masculine, feminine. So it's not an uncommon thing. It's not recommended, but I'm just saying it's not uncommon.
Because all the five sons of
Yulati
were ruling the kingdom,
but the point is they're a sutta, but now what nature they'll take up, because it's mixed, what will they do? It's just like this. Okay, I take a sabji. Okay, now I take a sabji, I put only a little bit of sugar, right, just to cut the bitterness. What do I call it? A sabji. Now let's say I use a little less sabji, more water, and a lot of sugar. Now what do I call it? Huh? A chutney. Okay, now what if I keep the same amount of sabji and I put a lot of sugar? Now what do I call it? Gujarati. Okay? You understand? So it depends on where it's being situated. So they're born as a sutta, but now what will they do? It's mixed. How will they go? So then they go towards a Brahmin, they go towards like Roma Harshana Sutta, but they've taken up the occupation of Brahmins. So they're counted in that category as long as they but if something goes wrong in the character, then nobody gets upset because they're, well, hey, he's a sutta anyway. What do you want? You know. So when Roma Harshana Sutta was killed by Balaram, then they, hey, he's a sutta. What do you you know. But then they said, but we gave him the blessing that he would live long and discuss this. So therefore, it said, because the son is born again, the father is born again as his son. Therefore, they take the son and put him there. That way, they kept it in place. You understand? So the point is that's the problem with mixed. You don't know which way it will go. Because a sutta has four occupations. They could be a Brahmin, they could be a Kshatriya, they could be a chariot driver, or they could be someone who snares, small animals. You know, America was conquered by trappers. You know, they go out and they snare all the little animals and they, the pelt. That was big business. You know, that's how the whole thing, all these companies, that's why they actually went over there, the English and everybody like that, to try to, because of all this. So who is doing that? Sutas. In a sense. So the point is you could take up any of these. Which one you take up is what, someone's a Kshatriya father, Kshatriya mother, generally they would take up the Kshatriya Dharma. But they might take up Brahminical Dharma. But the sutta, because they're mixed, you're not sure which way they'll go, so you have to watch and see. You train them, they're trained as kshatriyas, but if they take up any of the other, then they go that way. So that's what we mean by mixed. You know, which way it goes, you don't know. Is that in some sense? Yeah. Yes?
In general, the varna is not decided by birth, but you are saying that child of a kshatriya mother and a kshatriya father will be a kshatriya, so...
Generally... Why? What else would you expect to get?
But then you're saying that the varna is decided by birth, not by qualities.
It's like this. Now, in discussions, do you want to understand the intent of what we're trying to do, or you're just going to go by wording? Because if you're going to go by wording only, you're going to lose money. You're not going to make the deal. Because the guy who's making the good deal is going by what works in economics, not the wording. The guys who only work with wording, they have an MBA and they work for a guy who knows how to make money. Because they make the PowerPoint presentation, do all the thing, come out there with their funny little beard, and all that kind of stupid stuff. Does this make sense? So the point is the person's born in a situation, how are you going to deal with them? You don't know what they are, so you're just going to deal with them as nothing? Right? So, therefore, one quarter of your nature is what you were in your last life. One quarter depends on if the death ceremony was performed for you in your last life. One quarter is the family you're born into. One quarter is your association. Now, you can't do anything about the last two lives, the last life, right? So you can only do by what they're born in, their association. Now, they're born in a Kshatriya family, they're associating with Kshatriyas, therefore you'll deal with them with the Kshatriya until they prove otherwise. So we're saying that you have to deal with them in some way. right? You know, it's like that. Just like, let's say we have a potato, okay? Now, what is it? Right? It's a vegetable. But now what it will become, that you can't say. I just have potatoes. Now I can do potato stuff with potatoes. But now what that will come out to be, whether it'll be a sabji or anything else, that you don't know. You know what I'm saying? So the point is you're born into a position, you're dealt with it according to that until you prove otherwise. And then when you prove otherwise, that's how you're dealt with. So you're not stuck in that position, but you're dealt with of how you respond to that. Does that make sense? Yeah. The son of Yayati's third son, Druhyu, was Babru, whose son and grandsons were Setu, Arabandha, Gandhara, Dharma, Drita, Durmada, and Pracheta. So we can understand that people lived longer before, otherwise how do you get, you were starting here and one, you know, we're crossing over some yugas here and then getting down. So. The second son of Yayati's, the son of Yayati's second son, Turvasavu, was Vahni, whose seminal dynasty included Bharga, Banuman, Tribanu, Karandhama, and Maruta. The childless Maruta accepted Dushmanta, who belonged to the Puru dynasty, as his adopted son. Maharaj Dushmanta was anxious to have his kingdom returned, and so he went back to the Puru Vamsa. Of the four sons of Yadu, Sahasrajit was the eldest. The son of Sahasrajit was named Shatajit. He had three sons, of whom one was Haihaya. The sons and grandsons in the dynasty of Haihaya were Dharma, Netra, Kunti, Sohanji, Mahishman, Bhadrasenaka, Danaka, Kritavirya, Arjuna, Jayadvaj, Talajanka, and Vitihotra. The son of Vitihotra was Madhu, whose eldest son was Vrishni. Because of Yadu, Madhu, and Vrishni, their dynasties are known as Yadava, Madhava, and Vrishni. Another son of Yadu was Kroshta, and from him came Vrinjinavan, Svahita, Vishadgu, Chittarata, Shashabintu, Pritu Shrava, Dharma, Ushana, and Ruchika. Ruchika has five sons, one of whom was known as Jamagha. Jamagha was sonless, but by the mercy of the demigods, his childless wife gave birth to a son named Vidarbha. Shloka Anusharana, verses 1 to 38, the dynasties of Yayati's four sons. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, Anu, the fourth son of Yayati, had three sons named Shabhanara, Chakshu, and Pareshnu. O king, from Shabhanara came a son named Kalanara, and from Kalanara came a son named Srinjaya. From Sinjaya came a son named Janamejaya, and from Janamejaya came Mahashala. From Mahashala, Mahamana, and from Mahamana, two sons named Ushinara and Titikshu. The four sons of Ushinara were Shibi, Vara, Krimi, and Daksha. And from Shibi again came four sons named Vrishadharba, Sudhira, Madra, and Kekaya. The sons of Titikshu were Rushadratta. From Rushadratta came Homa. From Homa, Sutapa. And from Sutapa, Vali. By the semen of Dirgatama and the wife of Bali, the emperor of the world, six sons took birth, namely Anga, Vanga, Kalinga, Shuhma, Pundra, and Odra. Footnote 33. He was the blind child of Uttaya and Mamata by the curse of Brihaspati. He became a sage, and at the request of Bali, bore sons and Bali's wife, Sudeshna. Right? So he was born in a Kshatriya family, but because of the curse of Brihaspati, then he became a Brahmin. But then when his brother couldn't have children, then he requested him to beget children in his wife. And so then you got who was here. Right?
Brihaspati, you know, he forced, and he impregnated Mamata forcefully.
Yes.
And then.
So Dirgatama was in the room.
Dirgatama was in the room.
So he got upset. You know, because there's a, how you say? Space logistics, like that. But Brihaspati got upset, so he cursed him, he'd be blind. But also, I think Dhir Gautama is the one who, that from that, it may not be this Dhir Gautama, but an earlier, because these principles keep rotating, right? That in the beginning of creation, then you have the element where the men and women, then they don't necessarily, there's no rule that that the woman has to stay with any particular man. Generally, they always do, because that's just how things work nicely. But when Dhir Gautama, his mother, was going off with some other person, then, Dhir Gautama was a Brahmin. And so then he went off with someone else, then he cursed his mother that from now on, women will have to stay with one man. Right? So you have these principles that many times in the very beginning of the creation, there's certain things that aren't rules that aren't functioning because the natural just purity of everyone, and so they'll without rules function in the natural state. But once it starts coming where the quality starts dropping, you need the rules. Let's say in Satya Yuga, you don't need Varnashram. Everyone will do their duties anyway. But in Treta Yuga, you have to have Varnashram. So in the same way as men and women stay together, because that's what works nicely for a family. But as soon as it comes to the point where they didn't, then the curse comes up so that it fixes it. So that's the way it is. Does that make sense? Yes.
Usually we say that in Satya Yuga people are more pious. I mean, they are pious.
Yes.
But in my understanding, when Kali Yuga finishes, then they all merge into Mahavishnu and then they reappear again in Satya Yuga.
So it's not necessarily the same person. It means the persons at the end of Kali Yuga. Well, one thing you can look at it. Now, what happens to all the people who are killed at the end of Kali Yuga? Right? They become purified. So if you're killed by the Lord, that brings you to the Vasudeva Sattva platform. They don't have devotion to the Lord, right? But they're brought to that platform of Vasudeva Sattva. So where does that place you in the universal affairs? Right? Very elevated. So then you start from there and move down. That's why Prabhupada mentions is that you have this element of that those who are very... that the demoniac nature can take birth within these higher grade positions. But unless they give up that lower nature, then they'll degrade themselves. So it's like that blessing, you know, especially you see in Kali Yuga. The demons can take birth in Brahmin families. Now, if they give up that demoniac nature, then they'll do very nicely as Brahmins and elevate themselves. But if not, then by that position, they'll degrade themselves and others. So the point is, if you're not God-conscious, the tendency is you always degrade yourself. So without a good association, without God-consciousness, then things always go down. So. These six sons headed by Anga later became kings of six states on the eastern side of India. These states were known according to the names of their respective kings. From Anga came a son of Kalapana. So Anga is in Bengal. We're in Anga. So that's where Karna, he became king. He was given Anga because it's considered kind of out there. Yeah. It's the far end of Aryavarta.
It means that his father didn't have a kingdom, even though he was whatever,
Suta. No, he was a Suta, so no. No, because he's a chariot driver, so no kingdom. Chariot, but no kingdom. I say, have chariot, we'll travel. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Okay, and from Kalapana came Divirata. From Divirata came a son named Dharmarata, and his son was Chittarata, who was celebrated as Romapada. Romapada, however, was without issue, and therefore his friend, Maharaj Dasarath, gave him his own daughter named Shanta. And so this would be back then in Treta Yuga. Romapada accepted her as his daughter, and therefore she married Rishi Sringa. When the demigods from the heavenly planets failed to shower rain, Rishi Sringa was appointed the priest for performing a sacrifice. After being brought from the forest by the allurement of prostitutes, who danced, staged theatrical performances, accompanied by music, and embraced and worshipped him. After Rishi Sringa came, the rain fell. Right, so he was born as this son of, forget who, one Brahmin. And this Brahmin was very, very upset with family life. So he decided, my child is not even going to know what women are, let alone be a family person. So he grew up in the forest. He was so pure that he didn't know what women were. And so then in this kingdom, this was Romapada's kingdom, then there was no rain for 12 years. So it's a very bad situation. So they ask, how can they get rid of this? So they said the only way is that if Rishi Sringa, if he just comes and steps foot on your kingdom, rain will come. But then the problem comes is that his father is a very, very powerful Brahmin who easily gets upset, right? And you don't want to mess with him. And so then it was a matter of, okay, who's going to bring Rishi Sringa? So then no one had any idea in that, but then I think there were six prostitutes. They said, we'll bring him. And so, but they said, we need some things. You have to create this boat that looks like an island. You know, big. It looks like a complete island with huts on it and trees and everything like that and like that. And I think it was some hundreds and hundreds of men to row the boat. And so then when they found that the father went out for some yajna and left Rishi Sringa there, then the girls came on their boat. And they all dressed up as sages, right? And so, you know, brahmacharis, they wear the dhoti, they have the chadar around their neck, and, you know, their matted hair, like this. So came in, and so he just sees, wow, these are really unique sages, you know. So he asks where they say they're from the heavenly planets. So he hasn't seen, so he doesn't know what a woman is. So then he just thinks, wow, these are really nice-looking demigods, like that. So then they come, they sing, they dance, you know, they all, you know, how you say, you know, in greeting, they embrace him and all. They just, okay, so he just thinks this is the way they deal in the heavenly planets. So then from that, so they'd, you know, they'd invite him onto his island, this and that. Then he'd go back and this and that. Then when the father, I think, came back, then they disappeared, right? The father came back, and then he explained about these demigods, and what did they look like? Because then he could, the Kinaras, or the Ups, you know, what are they? And then when he explained, then he goes, hey, those are women. And so then, you know, he was more careful, and then after, when the father left again, they came back with their boat, and this time, instead of, they just brought him onto the boat. You know, and then they're, you know, doing all what they do, the singing, dancing, all that. And then the boat is moving down to the kingdom. So then in the morning, they arrive at the kingdom, so he steps out of the boat. You know, what's this place? And when he steps on the land, then the rain comes. But then at the same time, the father figures out what's happened, and the father comes after his son. So then they know he's coming, so the king is there, you know, all his ministers, everyone like that, and they're standing, you know, where you would come into the kingdom by the bridge. But the sage wasn't coming by the road. He was walking down the river. You would probably say stumping down the river. He was angry. So he's coming like that. Oh, ooh. Okay, so they're all there. When he gets there, they worship and this and that and so many things like that. And then, but the father's still not satisfied. But now that he's been associated with these girls, he's become attached to the concept like that. And so therefore then, I think it's arranged that he marries Lomapad's daughter and all that. Then the sage, okay, so it's, you know, it worked out. And then he did the big yajna and everything. But he's called Rishi Sringa because he actually has horns. He has deer antlers.
In the process, while those women were alluring him and, you know, embracing and associating, wouldn't he lose his sort of brahminical power?
Well, he doesn't know what's going on.
Didn't
he just becomes sort of attached.
Contaminate?
No. Kind of contaminate. No. It's just because he doesn't know. He's not thinking sense gratification. He just notices there's some emotional attachment. But he's not thinking because he has no concept.
You're looking at Prayojana. For him, there's no prayojana.
Yeah, yeah, there's nothing there. And the girls, it's not, they're only just trying to get him to stay with them so they can bring him down there, because their only business is to bring him there. And once he's there, then they go back to, you know, what their work. With that.
Yes,
yeah, you know what I'm saying? Because they're only being nice to him, like that. Does that make sense? They're only just being nice. And so then, oh, okay. After Rishi Sringa came, the rain fell. Thereafter, Rishi Sringa performed a sun-giving sacrifice on behalf of Maharaj Dasarath, who had no issue. And then Maharaj Dasarath had sons. From Romapad, by the mercy of Rishi Sringa, Chaturanga was born. And from Chaturanga came Pitu Laksha. Right, so both Romapad and Dasarath, they didn't have sons. So then he did the sacrifice, I guess, for both. The sons of Pritu Laksha were Brihadratha and Brihadkarma and Brihadbanu. From the eldest Brihadratha came a son named Brihadmana. And from Brihadmana came a son named Jayadratha. The son of Jayadratha, by the womb of his wife Sambhuti, was Vijaya. And from Vijaya, Driti was born. From Driti came Dhritavrata. And from Dhritavrata, Satkarma, and Frat Satkarma, Adiratha. While playing on the bank of the Ganges, Adiratha found a baby wrapped in a blanket. The baby had been left by Kunti because he was born before she was married. Because Adiratha had no sons, he raised the baby as his own. The son was later known as Karna. O King.
He was a kid himself.
So, let us say we go to the French Riviera. Everybody there is engaged in some really serious, you know, occupational duties. Yeah? Okay. Yeah? Okay, so Adiratha was down at the Ganga bank playing like everybody does when they go down to the bank of the Ganga, and he found a baby there. So the whole idea is, where do you put the baby? You put the baby in a place where everybody goes. So somebody finds the baby. Right? So, because otherwise, if you put the baby in a basket, you don't know where he's going to end up. Like that, you know. So sometimes it turns out okay, but you don't want to guarantee. You don't want to.
If you don't have to.
Yeah, it means if you don't have to. So we see is that also Menaka, then with, we just read about her, married to, her son was Bharat. Yes, but who is the daughter? Shakuntala. Yeah, so Menaka also saw where the sage Kanva always went to take his bath and put Shakuntala there. So it's not that they just stick them anywhere. You know, like it's always where people go. She did, yeah, but she did the boat thing.
That's not what happened to Moses. Hmm? Moses was put in the basket and pushed down the Nile.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. She's put in the basket. That's what I was saying, is that it did work out okay, but you can't guarantee. So here they're being more. Yeah, probably because he can't get over to the other place. But then here, then she can go to that place. So then, is that, you know what I'm saying? Being a queen, she can get down to that area. While for Moses, then not a queen, they can't get into that area. So they don't have that, you know, that little pass, you know? Can't get over, you know, so can't get through.
Iris scan.
Yeah, like that. So, but I said. Yes, very technical points, but
that's how we roll.
Okay, yeah. Okay, where were we? Okay, Karna. But notice he was in a blanket.
In a basket.
Basket.
No blanket.
In a basket.
Wrapped up in a basket. He's wrapped up in a basket.
It's not the basket that's wrapped around the baby.
Yeah, he's not wrapped in a basket. He's wrapped in a blanket. And the blanket's in a basket. Yes. The baby had been left by Kunti because he was born before she was married. Because Adhirata had no sons, he raised this baby as his own. This son was later known as Karna. O king, the only son of Karna was Vrishasena. Druhu, the third son of Yayati, had a son named Babru. And the son of Babru was known as Setu. The son of Setu was Arabdha. Arabdha's son was Gandhara. And Gandhara's son was Dharma. Dharma's son was Drita. Drita's son was Durmada. And Durmada's son was Pracheta, who had 100 sons. The Prachetas, the sons of Pracheta, occupied the northern side of India, which was devoid of Vedic civilization, and became kings there. Yayati's second son was Turvasu. The son of Turvasu was Vahini. The son of Vahini, Barga. And the son of Barga, Banuman. The son of Banuman was Tribhanu, and his son was the magnanimous Karandhama. Karandhama's son was Maruta, who had no sons and who therefore adopted a son of the Puru dynasty, Maharaj Dushmanta, as his own. Maharaj Dushmanta, desiring to occupy the throne, returned to his original dynasty, the Puru dynasty, even though he had accepted Maruta as his father. Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Govinda Premananda ki.